Is it time for a mind shift? If you don't know what that means, then join your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, a former evangelical Christian pastor and Bible college teacher of over 20 years, along the journey of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith, life, religion, and spirituality.
Thank you for joining me on Mind Shift Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I'm welcoming you back to another fantastic episode. This week, I'm bringing you a discussion that I had with Natalie Hoffman. She is the survivor of an emotionally abusive marriage, and we're going to talk about that and specifically how this issue of religious indoctrination factors into the whole thing, especially coming at it from a conservative evangelical Christian point of view. The various theologies, the doctrines, the teachings that people like Bill Gothard, as I've talked about before in other podcasts, the cult of the Institute in Basic Youth Conflicts, as it was called when I was a kid going to it. Now it's called Institute in Basic Life Principles, and they still use his teachings, even though he's been disgraced and booted out of the organization. They still use his principles. It has affected, I don't know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of marriages, children who were raised not only in his cult, but also in the ATI, the Advanced Training Institute, the curriculum that many, many parents use for homeschooling their kids, according to his teachings. How those sorts of teachings have affected people like Natalie, people like myself. My parents tried to raise us kids according to Bill Gothard's principles, as I've talked about in other shows, and it messed us up. And it messed up their marriage, too, big time. Now, one of the things I'm really interested in talking to Natalie especially, is making the connection between abusive relationships and the world of the cults. I've been reading the book, Take Back Your Life, Recovering from Cults and Abusive Relationships by Yanya Lalich and Madeline Tobias. And this is very interesting. We were watching the show, the series, I don't know if you've seen it. It's the Surviving R. Kelly. It's a documentary series about young women. Well, they're not so young anymore, but when they were 15, 16, 17, they were taken in by R. Kelly. And basically, he had sex with them, and he would kind of keep them in his house. He would separate them from their families and do all sorts of horrible, abusive things to these young women. And he got away with it for many, many years. But now he's finally being called to account for all of the stuff that he's done. But as we were watching this show, Surviving R. Kelly, I turned to my wife and I said, you know, everything that they're describing of R. Kelly could also be said of many, many cult leaders. The abuse, the indoctrination, the control, the separation from the family, of the sexual abuse, obviously. And that's when it started to make the penny kind of drop for me. I'm thinking, wait a minute, there's obviously a parallel. And then when I got this book, as I say, the subtitle is Recovering from Cults and Abusive Relationships. So Lalich and Tobias are going to tie right into both the sort of cult indoctrination, the control, the abuse, and abusive relationships. And it's quite interesting. I wanted to read you this little section from their book, talking about from the chapter, The Cult Experience, talking about abusive relationships and family cults. And they say, quote, forensic psychiatrist Gary Myers suggests that abuse victims should not try to adapt to the abuse. And of course, this is what we see so often, specifically in the case of women in relationships and abusive marriages. Of course, it can happen to men too, but they shouldn't try to adapt to the abuse. Don't normalize it. He says, but they should get out of the relationship as soon as possible or find ways to change it if the abuser is willing to get help and stop abusing. Today, the availability of public education, police intervention, and battered women's shelters means that many abuse victims can extricate themselves by talking with someone outside the abusive system or getting to a shelter. However, we know that in many instances, the abusive tactics aren't recognized for what they are until the victim is too psychologically trapped to be able to act on her own behalf. In this regard, Meyer writes, and now quoting from Meyer, unfortunately, all too many women remain in the victim role for years, and when they try to make attempts to change, they discover that they do not have enough energy to overpower the abuser. They become so distrusting of their own judgment that they do not feel that they can cope by themselves, especially when there is the reality of raising children and they are uncertain of financial support. It is in these circumstances that the cycle of abuse can continue for years. And Meyer concludes by saying, even though she may be a competent mother and homemaker and or employee, the constellation of control tactics used against her and her perception that she has no support erode her confidence. The cycle of abuse continues. And that's the end of the quote from Meyer. Now going back to Lalich and Tobias, they say, luckily, people are able to get out of these relationships and seek help when psychological coercion and manipulative exploitation have been used in an abusive relationship. The person leaving may feel a paralyzing terror, constant anxiety, apprehension, vigilance, and feelings of impending doom. She may feel fatigued, passive, and unable to act, exhibiting poor memory. These are the same types of difficulties encountered by people leaving a cult, end quote. And that's what I found so absolutely fascinating. According to Lalich and Tobias and people like Meyer, there is a definite correlation between what goes on in the world of cults and in abusive relationships, whether it's sexually abusive, emotionally, or physically abusive. And so that's why I'm very interested to talk to a person like Natalie Hoffman. She comes out, as I say, of an emotionally abusive relationship herself, and she is now in a position to help other people, mainly women. But as I say, this can happen to men too. And so I'm very interested to hear her insights, and I think you'll find that this is also a very helpful discussion, especially if you're a woman trapped in an emotionally or physically abusive relationship. What can you do? And then when you add the religious dogma piece, that becomes even more problematic. And we're going to get into that as well as she tells her own story. So I'm glad that Natalie reached out to me. She just started, actually got on Twitter not very long ago. She messaged me, and this is how we ended up getting in touch with each other. So let's go into the chat with Natalie Hoffman as we talk about escaping emotionally abusive relationships. Thank you, Natalie, for reaching out on Twitter. I believe it was is how we connected. Mm-hmm. You're an author, you're a podcaster, a blogger, abuse survivor. And I'm fascinated to hear, first of all, your story as well as what you've been learning over the years. I guess you've been working mainly with women, I think it's from what it sounds like. So thanks for being a guest on Mindshift Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Saw some of the things you were writing about on Twitter, and I thought, oh my word, I think this, I would really like to talk more with this person. So, and your audience.
That's it. We need to connect because, as you say, I've been doing a lot of stuff on the cult specifically since January, and I've talked about this before, but it was seeing a series of documentaries on television over here in the UK last, I think it was October, November, where I was listening to stories from cult survivors. And what struck me about every single one of them, even though they come out of different religions and different cults, was how similar not only their stories were to each other, but how similar their stories were to mine, coming out of religious fundamentalism and evangelical Christianity. And that's what started me down this rabbit hole. And specifically, when I was reading your blog just now before we started recording about how to recover from abusive relationships, what struck me was the parallels with the cults. For example, I've been reading Janya Lalich's book, Take Back Your Life, and the subtitle is Recovering from Cults and Abusive Relationships. Mm-hmm. And they talk about in the book the striking parallels between the mind control, the indoctrination, the abuse within cults and abusive relationships. So I wonder if you could share with us your story, how you got out, and then what you're doing now.
Yes. Well, and the reason why there's so many parallels with all of the, you know, with cults and fundamentalism and emotional abuse in relationships is because they're all about power and control. That's what abuse is. And so there are patterns that are just, they're the same patterns that you see over and over. It doesn't matter whether you're dealing with abuse in your church or in a cult environment that you're in or in a relationship. And it could be a relationship at work too. It doesn't necessarily have to be a, you know, an intimate, you know, personal relationship. But my story, I grew up in I guess I would call it a fundamentalist Christian background. Although the church that I went to growing up was actually a really pretty healthy church, I think. We were it was almost like a family with outside of our family. And I was involved in the public school system. I was very, you know, so it wasn't like my church was everything to me, but I did go to youth group and we did go to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, and every Wednesday night. I was in Pioneer Girls. I don't know if they even have that anymore, but the thing that kind of went sideways for me growing up was that my parents began to get involved in going to the Bill Gothard seminars every year. I think I was maybe around 12 years old when that started. So Bill Gothard would come into town and in Minneapolis in the big, huge stadium, and it would be jam packed with people once a year. And we would make, you know, we would go to this seminar. It was like 3-hour talk every single night, Monday, and then all day, Monday through Thursday, and then all day Friday, all day Saturday. And I was the oldest of three children, and I was already kind of wired to be a more of a black and white thinker. I was a rule keeper. I wanted to please everybody. And I also had some problems with my mom. She tended to be a little more controlling. And so I was looking for answers for my own life. You know, how can I be the happiest person, but also how can I make everybody happy so that they'll love me? That was where I was coming from. So I would go to these seminars, and Bill Gothard kind of laid out the plan for how you can solve youth conflicts. That's what it was called, basic seminar and basic youth conflicts or something like that. And so, you know, I listened. I was one of those kids who sat and took copious notes and took everything to heart and then went forward and wanted to obey everything that Bill Gothard said, because, you know, he basically promised if you do A, B, and C, then you will get, you know, this end result. And I wanted that end result. So I did those things. And you know, this meant that I didn't listen to rock music. I didn't listen. And some of this was, I just wasn't allowed to, you know, but even so I was, you know, I really wanted to listen to Amy Grant, for example, but I wasn't allowed to listen to Amy Grant because she had a beat to her music. And if you go back and listen to her music back then, it's like, what?
Yeah, it's the most bubblegum pop you could imagine. There was nothing offensive about Amy Grant.
No, and most of her songs were just, back then when she first started, it was just her strumming on the guitar. It was just kind of folksy, you know. Yeah,
it was not even rock and roll. Well, I was going to just interject really quickly. I grew up in the Bill Gothard cult too. So your experiences are almost exactly a mirror of mine. We used to go to the Gothard seminars in Seattle. My parents were heavily involved in the host and hostess committee, which was in charge of seating people and everything. In fact, my dad was the president of that a few years when I was a kid. So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I consider it a cult, actually. Yeah. I don't know how you see it, but to me, it's absolutely a cult. Yeah. So it's a fundamentalist Bible cult. Gothard was, now he's been accused of all sorts of sexual assaults on women and all the rest of it. So he fits the classic markers of a cult leader in my understanding of it. So, yeah, I'm tracking with you. I understand exactly what you're saying. And it's those answers, isn't it? He interpreted the Bible in a fundamentalist, literalist way, and it made perfect sense to someone looking for answers. So here you are, you're like a young teenager sort of at this point, and this seems to answer all the problems and issues in your life. It's wonderful.
Right.
Or maybe it wasn't.
Well, right. Well, and I also, you know, the really sad thing about it is that you think that your whole view of God goes sideways, because they're telling you that this is straight from God. Like, one of the most destructive things that I was taught that really ruined my life, really, was that God speaks through your authority. So that meant that anything that my mom said to me or any of her attitudes towards me, I actually thought that that was how God must feel towards me then. And my mom had some problems, you know, that she still to this day doesn't, you know, admit to. So and then when I got married, I married a man who was a baby Christian, but I was going to, you know, help him grow and be the wind beneath his wings and everything. And even though he was this baby Christian, I've been a Christian since I was 7. I was an avid Bible reader. I went to Bible school, you know, college. I had led Bible studies. I'd been a missionary. I had all this experience that I brought to the table. He was a baby Christian, but I now believe that because simply by virtue of the fact that I said I do to this person, that now he was God's voice in my life. And even though it didn't make sense, I'm a fairly intelligent person. And I could not make sense, like I couldn't intelligent sense of that idea with what I was experiencing, which he was able to use all of that to really manipulate my guilt. I felt I struggled with so much guilt about everything. It was such an eye-opening breath of fresh air to realize that our consciences are, our consciences are actually shaped by how we're raised. We could be raised in a home that where they teach you or indoctrinate you with the idea that whenever you look at the color red, that that is like super sinful to look at the color red. And so you're going to grow up and you're going to think that that's a horrible thing. And if you look at the color red, you're going to feel guilt, not because the color red is a sinful color, but because you've been indoctrinated with the idea that looking at it is sinful. And just knowing, having that knowledge is very freeing, because then you can go back and look at all of the things that you felt guilty about and go, well, what should I really have felt guilty about that? Is that really a bad thing? No, yeah, it's not.
Absolutely. Well, you're unpicking the conditioning. That's what I've learned, is one of the things that disempowers that indoctrination is to go back and, as you say, name it and figure out how you were conditioned, manipulated, coerced, indoctrinated. And that is, it kind of defangs, I think, a lot of its power. Yep. I was going to comment on what you said about you and your husband. The same kind of thing happened with my parents. My sister Valerie and I, we did a podcast on this a couple years ago about what it was like to grow up in this fundamentalist environment. And one of the things that we realized was that my mom was a much more strong-willed type person. My dad was very passive, and he was not a mature Christian as your husband was. And so she was much more, she kind of wore the pants in the family, to put it bluntly. But when they started going to the Gothard cult, as you were saying, it flipped that script completely on its head. So she was told, you've got to be under your husband's umbrella of authority. Mm-hmm. And he himself is under God's larger umbrella and all this. And so she had to knuckle under. She had to submit, because that was the, quote, biblical way of doing it. And yet that led to just a miserable, unhappy marriage. She didn't like it. And he never, ever stepped up to fulfill that role. And as a result, she started triangulating and sort of talking to me when I was 9, 10, 11 about how miserable and unhappy she was in her marriage, which was highly inappropriate. And that was a big mess. That messed me up big time, you know. So, yeah, it messed our family up. It messed my parents' marriage up. So yeah, I'm tracking with you 100%. I know exactly, you know, what you're sort of describing. So this, you had this dysfunctional marriage, but it was supposed to be this biblical model. But of course, Bill Gothard was single. That's the whole thing.
Right.
He's never been married. What the hell is this guy doing, giving parenting and marital advice from the Bible? It's just,
it's insane.
Unbelievable.
It was really insane. Well, and then sadly, I'm embarrassed to say this, but we had 9 kids, and I
homeschooled. Wow, 9 kids.
And as part of our, for 4 years, we actually did the ATI curriculum. So did you do that at all, or are you familiar with that?
Well, I was very fortunate. My parents didn't homeschool us. Otherwise, I'm sure we would have been in that ATI world, you know, but they sent us to a very small Christian school. Okay. In Seattle area. So from fifth grade on, I was in Christian school all the way through high school. And I think that was sort of their next best attempt to make sure we were sheltered from the world. Because like you, we didn't have a television. We weren't allowed to listen to secular music. We were totally sheltered from the evil world. So they sent us to Christian school, and that messed us up too. So you homeschooled anyway. You were using the ATI, which is, yeah, that's the Gothard curriculum.
Yes. And we did that for 4 years. But after I started realizing, because you pay a lot of money for that. And I have a degree in English education. So I have an education degree, and we're doing this ATI. And I'm thinking, this just does not seem, there's something not right about this.
Not very academic, not very scholarly.
My kids are not learning anything. But I was buying into, at first, the first couple of years, I was buying into the whole idea that, well, this is a spiritual thing. You know, your kids don't need to have academics. They just need to have really good character. And they just need to, you know, and God will just help them to be great learners. They're not learning what to think. They're learning how to think. Okay, which I'm all for that. I think we should all learn critical thinking skills. I think
Absolutely.
That's really important. But also, we do need to have some basic academics under our belts, because when we go to college, which again, I don't even think they really felt like college was necessary. You know, do you really have to go to college? Well, actually, some people do. You know, if you really want to have opportunities, it depends on what you want to do. And I'm all for people doing what they want, but some people are going to need to go to college. And they're going to need to have that academic base in order to be able to make it in college. And also, you know, I've talked to I have a 23-year-old son. I have lots of sons, but one of them is 23. And he is in college right now. And he told me, he said, you know, one of the things that's really, he was one of my kids that was homeschooled all the way through. And we have lots of really amazing conversations about this whole thing. Because he, like you, he kind of has an upbringing like you did. Okay, so he's deprogramming. Fortunately, he can deprogram with me, I mean, with his mom, you know. And I've apologized to my children, all of my children, and, you know, we've been spending the rest of my life making amends. But so we were he is telling me that he really wishes that he would have learned social skills. Now, he had lots of siblings, but that does not teach you how to interact with various people outside of your own family. So when they make this argument that, oh, these kids, they're getting social skills by learning how to get along with kids of, you know, with people of all ages in their own family. No, that does not. No, they still come out of that just a little bit odd.
You can always tell a homeschooled kid. I remember when I went to Bible college down in Portland in Oregon, there were several homeschool kids and you could just spot them a mile away. And it's just something about them. They're so super shy, super painfully shy. And you could just tell a kid that was homeschooled, you know, yeah. And that was the same kind of thing. Yes, you might have a big family, but the socialization, which is ironic because then they have these homeschool collectives so that their kids can meet other homeschooled kids.
Right.
We had some friends at Bible college that homeschooled their kids. And they set up this collective because this was such a concern. They thought, we've got to get these kids some socialization. I said, well, isn't this just a school? You're creating a school. Because they would go once a week to a church and there'd be like 30 kids and they'd do a days long, you know, math and English and stuff. And I said, Steve, that's just a school. Yeah. That's not homeschooling. Oh, well, you know, but the rest of the week we're homeschooled, you know, so. There's that cognitive dissonance. That's what strikes me about your story. I'm hearing all these descriptions of you're living with the cognitive dissonance and able to suppress it and stuff it somehow and keep moving forward.
Yes.
That's a fascinating thing.
Well, and what I wanted to bring out the point too. One of the things that I think causes this oddity is that when you grow up in a home where you are so protected and where there's a conversation, an ongoing conversation that's always about this protection and you know, us versus them, you are afraid. You're afraid to take risks. You're afraid of other people. You're afraid of what's going to happen to you. There's just this, you are marinating in fear
Absolutely.
Of what's out there.
But it's
and
a great way to control people. That's how you control. If you step outside the umbrella, you're fair game to satanic attacks. That's what they told me growing up. I can remember, I've said this on another podcast, but when my sister, older sister Valerie, she got pregnant when she was 17. And I specifically remember my mom telling me the reason your sister's pregnant at 17 is because she stepped out of the umbrella of our protection and ultimately God's. And it was, you know, that's why she's pregnant, because she made sinful choices. And this is the consequence of it. She's ruined her life now. And, you know, don't let that happen to you. So there's that fear, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. So anyway, you know, I went to a Christian college, Northwest. It's called University of Northwestern now, and I had a great experience there. But it was conservative, very conservative, but my friends listened to rock and roll music, and that's kind of how I started. I kind of broke out a little bit. And I had some really excellent teacher professors there that were a couple of female professors that were very liberal and very feminist, but they had to kind of keep it under wraps. Looking back now, I see how they, you know, they both had their doctorates. I can see how they managed to fit in there, but also managed to
Yeah, keep it on the down low.
Exactly.
Yeah. You don't want to cause too many waves. Yeah, rock the boat too much.
Exactly. So that was a great experience for me. But then when I ended up getting married, I fell back into the whole, the really conservative thinking. And part of the reason was, is I thought that, well, I had an emotionally destructive marriage. And he was, I thought that if I just could get it right as far as the submission thing. So I'm much more of a leader type of a person. I'm more articulate. I like to read books. I'm a thinker. I like to have great conversations. And I also, I take initiative. I've built two businesses, sold one. Whereas my ex-husband was very passive and laid back and just, and you know, I think, I mean, now looking back, I think if we had not been in the fundamentalist world, and if he, I think he does have a personality disorder too, but let's just say he was just your average, more laid back, quieter, passive person.
In a non-religious environment. Yeah. Exactly. Without the indoctrination of the cult.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with a marriage where you've got more of a leader type of a female and more of a passive type of a male. There's nothing wrong with that.
The same thing as my parents. Exactly the same.
Yeah.
And that dynamic just did not work. And what my sister Val describes is that she grew up before they got into the Gothard cult. She was about 9 or 10, and their marriage was completely different. They would laugh. They would have fun. They would joke. It was very relaxed, and it was a lot of fun. When they started getting into that, everything changed because, as you're saying, you're describing the same kind of dynamic. My mom had to knuckle under, and that was not her, and it wasn't him either.
Right.
The whole thing was messed up.
So you're told, in that way, you are told, this is the way you are supposed to be. This is the hole that you're supposed to fit into.
Well, that God wants you.
Exactly. If you can't even it, more. There's something wrong with you spiritually.
Yeah,
you
know? You're rebellious or something, sinful or something.
Right, right. Yeah. So it's very damaging. It's damaging to who you are as a person. It's dehumanizing, really, because you're basically, it's everything is so ironic, I think, because here they're trying to get away from this conveyor belt thinking, and yet that's exactly what they're doing. They're putting everyone on a conveyor belt and saying, wear this outfit, have this hairstyle, be this person, and get on the conveyor belt and do exactly so that everyone looks, when you look at those ATI conferences, everyone looks the same.
That's what they said. I've never been to an ATI conference, luckily for me, but I've been to the Bill Gothard conferences, but I know what you're saying. I've heard that description, especially the women, well, even the men too. They've got the khaki trousers on and they all kind of look the same. The women have a similar hairstyle. Which is so weird because, of course, I know this is off the subject, but Bill Gothard, he sort of had this predilection for certain types of women that he would abuse at the headquarters. And even they had that sort of look, and they said it was Gothard's harem. You know, so there's some very bizarre – it was almost like he was projecting his own, I don't know, fantasies or sexual desires onto the women in his cult, and then they had to go out and dress and look like his ideal woman. The ones he abused sexually. I mean, the whole thing is so screwed up. It really is. Yeah. So you're in this Gothard cult trying to make your marriage work, which ironically it wasn't working. Yeah. Even though God, that's the thing. I thought it's almost like it should be an evangelical prosperity gospel. That's essentially what he's preaching. If you do all the right things, these basic life principles, God will bless you. And yet in your case and in my parents' case, it didn't work.
Right. Well, and so, and we're just a small sampling of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have been destroyed.
Oh, absolutely. So many lives.
Yeah. Well, we got out of that and then we ended up kind of going into the whole Vision Forum thing. Have you heard of Vision Forum, Doug Phillips?
No, I haven't. Is that another fundamentalist thing? I've never heard of that.
Well, it was another movement, big homeschooling movement. And Doug Phillips had a big family and he started this whole thing. And he was also very similar to Vision Forum. He ended up having an affair with his children's nanny. So, And then that whole thing fell apart. So it's just kind of interesting how. But anyway, we got into that for a while, and then that's when I started. I had my last baby 7 years ago, and that's. I started realizing, you know what, there is something kind of aside from all of this religious stuff. I realized that I was in an emotionally abusive marriage, mainly because one of the biggest markers of emotional abuse is that one of the partners is unable to take responsibility for themselves. They put all the responsibility on the victim, and then he or she, it can be both ways, takes all of that responsibility and tries to fix everything. So when you try to resolve a conflict, the only way to resolve a conflict is either to sweep the problem under the rug, or to take it, for me to take responsibility for it and say, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, if I gave him feedback about anything, I'm the one who would get blamed, shamed, criticized. So I won't get into too much of that. But when I started realizing that, started doing research, reading a whole bunch of books, I began the waking up process. And it was a lot of grieving. But with a parallel theme along with that was also seeing how my church was responding to my waking up. And they were not responding well.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I'm shocked, Natalie. I thought they would embrace it with open arms and help you deconstruct and everything.
So some of your readers might be interested to know that we had been members of John Piper's church for many years by that time.
I'm even more shocked that John Piper wasn't all on board with your deconstruction.
Well, by the time I stepping forward and trying to get help and trying to work with people, he had retired by that time. And there was a new pastor on board, Jason Meyer. And Jason Meyer decided that he was going to lead the way in eradicating abuse from his church. Okay. Which is another interesting kind of ironic twist, because I don't believe that you can eradicate abuse of women unless you eradicate the theology that abuses women. And that theology, I believe that complementarianism is just soft patriarchy, and patriarchy is the definition of abuse. It is.
Can you define complementarianism? What I know there's different view, you know, egalitarian, complementarian. Can you describe for the listeners the differences between some of those views? Theological views, really, isn't it, based on what their reading of the scripture?
Yes. I'll try to do that off the top of my head. I do have a blog article where I go into more detail, but off the top of my head, I'm going to get the definitions wrong, I'm sure. But basically, just to keep it really basic.
Yeah, just a simple overview.
Yeah. Patriarchy is just obviously men believe that they are over women. It's power over.
Yeah. And it's God ordained, isn't it?
Yes. God ordained men have power over women. Complementarianism, it's soft patriarchy. So they still believe that men are over women, but over women in a way that protects them. They kind of dress it up and make it more spiritual and more like kinder sounding. So men are over women in order to protect them and take care of them and honor them and cherish them and love them. That power over is a representation of that love and cherishing.
And that's Christ, the head of the church and all that, the bride of Christ and all that, Ephesians 4, Ephesians 5.
Yes.
You've got the wife has to submit to the husband as to the Lord, and husbands are supposed to honor, cherish their wife. That's the way we always were taught in Bible college, wasn't it? Yeah. Is that you're in charge. It's a biblical headship model, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's the way God set it up. And as a husband, you have to listen to your wife, but ultimately, and you should take her advice, but ultimately yours is the final decision. And if you don't, God's going to hold you to account as the husband. So that's how we got out of the back door sort of thing.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's kind of a complementarian view.
Exactly. And then egalitarianism is just the belief that men and women are equal, and you come to a marriage and there's mutual responsibility, mutual love, mutual respect, mutual everything, you know?
Yeah, work it out. Obviously, you're going to have different personalities, different drives, different, you know, abilities. Like you were describing earlier, you have these abilities about, you know, like me, I'm fascinated in reading and research, and I love having conversations with people. And, you know, my wife, she's totally different than me. But I'm not going to try to force her to become like me, and she doesn't try to force me to become like her. There's no way that's going to work. We've had to learn how to work that out over the years. And it wasn't always easy.
Right. But you know what? That it takes more wisdom and more work to work through a relationship like that, where two people are coming together and accepting their differences, than it does to just say, well, we just know how it's going to go. She's down there. I'm up here. End of story.
I'm in charge. Yeah. Submit. And that's, yeah. Ephesians 5:23. I can remember certain Christians saying that to their wives, you know, just submit. Husband, you know, the wife's supposed to submit to the husband. That's it. The Bible says it. You have to do it. You know, that's so such an unhealthy, that's an abusive thing, in my opinion.
Right.
So yeah, you're deconstructing. The church isn't taking it well, which is not surprising, especially coming out of a very fundamentalist John Piper church. Right. So how did it end up going down? Now, you've mentioned ex-husband, so you've obviously, there's a spoiler alert in there somewhere.
Yes,
I was going to ask, did your marriage survive? But obviously it didn't.
No, we separated. We were separated for almost 2 years before I filed for divorce. And during those 2 years, I was trying to get help from the church. They were not buying my story. And of course, my ex-husband was, he launched an all-out smear campaign, tried to make it look like I had borderline personality disorder, that I was crazy, that I was a horrible person. And they bought it. And they bought it because a lot of, when women are trying to get out and they're trying to get help, we're kind of like this, you know, we're like, yeah, you gotta believe me, this horrible stuff is going on, you gotta believe me. And people are like, well, are you sure you've done everything? Are you sure? Because I see a lot of sin in you too, and blah, 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 blah. And this is what the husband's been heaping on her their whole marriage. Yeah,
exactly.
And now she's getting, so her whole experience is completely invalidated and denied. She can go a little crazy. You know, she can feel, feels crazy.
I was going to say, it sounds like gaslighting. That's classic gaslighting.
Gaslighting.
Isn't it? Yes. You start questioning your own reality. Is this my narrative? Is this true? Am I crazy? I might be actually crazy. Yep. Everyone around me is telling me it's me, you know? Yep. Okay. Maybe it is me. Maybe I am the one who's the problem here.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. So my only saving grace was that I had kept journals my whole marriage. And I went back and looked at those journals. I took a 2-day weekend and I read through all my journals. And I took notes on my journals, all the things that I'd seen. And I started seeing the patterns. I could see them like they were plain as day in black and white. And by the end of that weekend, I was on my face in that dirt. It was kind of a nasty hotel room, on my face on the floor going, God, I give up. I'm done. And I really believed that God was saying, good. Finally, finally, Natalie,
trying to get through to you.
You're going to stop looking at other people and stop doing what these people are telling you. And just, what if you just followed me? Because I know a lot of your listeners are like not into God anymore, but I still am. I've really had to go through this journey of divorcing my religion from my relationship with Jesus, which was really real. And I'm going to be honest and say, I have had times when I've thought, I've gone through that thinking where, well, maybe all of that was in my head too. You know, maybe I was gaslighting myself. There's too many things in my life that I feel, you know how you feel things deep down in your core? That's just, and I listen to my core now. I don't not listen to what I am hearing inside of myself. And one of the things that I hear inside of myself over and over again is this connection with Jesus Christ only. And I think that Jesus Christ, I believe that he is just as pig biting mad about what's going on as I am, as you are, as every other disenfranchised, you know, Christian is.
In air quotes.
I don't even want to use that word to describe myself because I don't believe it has the same meaning anymore that it did back when Christianity first began.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes. A lot of things have been co-opted. Well, I was going to say back about your point, yes, I know a lot of my listeners, they're atheists, agnostics, but there's a lot of people who are, and I've talked to a lot of people last year, really specifically, I said, I just came across a whole group of people that were saying, yeah, I've deconstructed massively, but I've been able to retain a view of God and a view of Jesus and a way to read the Bible that works. And that what I found in every single person was, yes, they were able to do that, but they had to completely revise those views. Yes. So what I hear you saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like to me, the God that you're still in touch with is certainly not the God of fundamentalism. There's no. it can't be. Otherwise, you'd be right back in the shit. You'd be right back in what you were doing 10, 15 years ago. Whatever that God is, it's radically different.
It is radically different. I was going to say, too, backing up to one of the verses that you brought up, you know, the whole submission thing. I'll use that verse as an example of how I've had to, like, learn how to read the Bible in a different way. So I don't go to church anymore. I still have a really hard time reading the Bible, and I was a huge Bible lover. I'm just now starting to go back, and I really miss it. I miss the comfort that I got from it. I miss the beauty of it, and the there's so much that's really rich about the Bible. But I also know now that in the book of John, at the very beginning, it says that the Word of God was made flesh and dwelt among us, and that was Jesus Christ. So now when I say the Word of God, I'm not talking about a book. I'm talking about a person. And so, okay, so backing up now to that verse about submission, right before the verse where it says, submit to your wives, submit to your husbands, it says to submit, you submit to one another. And the thing that I've learned about that verse is that it was a given that people in those days with wives would submit to their husbands. That was just the culture.
Yeah, it was a patriarchal culture.
Right. Paul did not have to write instructions and say, okay, wives, I know this is really earth shattering, but
this is going to be
husbands.
Huge shock to you.
No.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
He was saying, I've got some earth shattering news for you. You guys are supposed to submit to each other now. It's not a patriarchal thing anymore. And wives, when you do your submitting, you know, your mutual submitting, you do it not for him, not for your husband. You do it as unto God now. So totally different reason for why you submit.
Redefined everything.
But we submit to each other. Well, that is a completely different picture. And then another friend of mine just was telling me this the other day. She said, I was reading the whole book of Ephesians, like just from beginning to end.
In context.
Exactly. In context.
It's what a concept.
And so what she said, it just dawned on me, what he's telling us to submit to is this law, to submit to love, that we can actually rest and submit to the love of our fellow Christians, the love of our husbands. It's a huge, big, beautiful thing. And yet patriarchal people pick up that one verse.
Exactly.
And, like, it's some kind of a life-shattering thing. And they run with it. What? No.
Well, and they use it to bludgeon not just wives, their wives, but women in general, because that verse gets used in churches all over the place. Somehow it's been twisted to mean women should submit to men. You have to do what I'm telling you just because I'm a man and you're a woman.
Right.
We're not even married, but you better listen to me and do what I say. In that patriarchal culture, and why women can't be pastors and preachers and elders and somehow that has to do with all that. So yeah, I'm curious to find out. So your marriage didn't make it though. That's really interesting. So were you vilified by the church? I mean, obviously divorce, unless someone's had an affair in a fundamentalist church, that's not allowed. It's not grounds, biblical grounds for marriage. How did that work out?
Well, they have, the way Bethlehem does it is they have a big meeting. They have to have a quorum of people. So there had to have been at least 400 people at that meeting, people that I knew and loved. And they told the people in that meeting, I had a mole that told me what was going on.
Oh, right. They ratted them out, huh?
Exactly.
Oh, so you weren't there. So
they were meeting there.
Let me get this straight. They were having a church meeting about you and your husband potentially getting a divorce, or had you already separated at this point?
We had already, by the time they had two meetings. One meeting was when let's see, what was the order of this? One meeting was right before I separated. It was after I separated and I was going to get a, I had filed for divorce.
But you were still technically married at that point.
Yes. So I'd filed for divorce and they had a meeting that said, you know, let's pray for her repentance. She thinks that she's been emotionally abused. This is all the things we've done to help her, but she's in rebellion from God. So then supposedly they prayed for me for a year. And then a year later, when right when before my divorce was final, and by the way, I had already submitted my resignation to the church. So they did excommunicate me, but 2 years before they excommunicated me, I had already submitted my resignation and removed my membership, but they wouldn't let me remove my own membership because I was in sin.
Right. So, yeah. So you can't revoke your membership. We're going to hold the power. So, I mean, talk about attempts to control. I mean, that's just, it's like trying to resign from a job and your boss doesn't accept your resignation letter. I'm going to fire you. That's what I'm going to do. You can't resign. I'm going to fire your ass. I mean, it's just.
Exactly.
Really?
Well, they did worse than that. They actually, after they excommunicated me, they actually went and had meetings. I was going to another very large church in our city at that time. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. They went to that church and had meetings with those elders. I found out from one of the women who was a part of on their team that was supposed to help abused women. She actually ended up leaving Bethlehem as well and circled back to me, apologized for her part in everything. And then she told me some things on the back end. But one of the things she told me is that they were having meetings with those elders in order to get those elders at that church to kick me out of that church as well. So that I
can. Unbelievable.
Here's me. I've got all my little kids and I'm trying to go to church. Okay. And I'm not
trying to do the right thing.
Exactly. So those elders actually reached out to me and said, you are welcome in our church and we're not listening to them and it's okay. So, but
we're not going to kick you out.
Yeah. This woman told me that at one point they were out in the parking lot of that church laughing and joking about how my ex-husband was stalking me. And these are elders. These are grown up older men.
Church leaders.
Church leaders, and they're laughing and joking about a woman's ex-husband stalking her. I can't even wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, there are no words, really.
No.
It's beyond shocking. There's less a gleefulness to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But if you go back to the Gothard thing, isn't that sort of the theology? You've removed yourself from that umbrella, as it were. Therefore, anything that happens to you, including your ex-husband stalking you, is you deserved it, Natalie, for being a rebellious, person who.
Exactly.
You were the problem all along. Don't you see it? It's as clear as day, isn't it?
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Well, and there's no trust in God at whatsoever. There's no trust. It really, in a truly Christian environment where we are worshiping and loving Jesus. Jesus did not come after people and force them to do anything. He never told people, oh, you go do this and you have to do that and you have to do this. He invited people into relationship with himself. That's all he did. And some people came and some people didn't. And he let them go.
He didn't
to anyone, even the people who were crucifying. He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And he put himself on. He trusted his heavenly Father. That if we are going to be followers of Jesus Christ, we're going to trust him to work in someone else's life. We are not going to take on that role of, well, I don't think you should get a piercing in your belly button because I don't think I should get one, so therefore you shouldn't get one either. And I've decided that that's my rule. No piercings in the belly button. Or just pick any random rule that they have. They've got all kinds of, depending on what church you go to, it's a different set of rules.
What about tattoos? I mean, I've got a lot of tattoos.
Exactly.
I think I'm not going
to
be accepted.
Hell.
That is unbelievable. So you got out of that thing. Thankfully, you got out of that control. It's basically a fundamentalist cult is what I'm hearing you describe it. They're trying to control people's lives past the point of no return. You've long since left and they're still going after you. That is shocking. That is really shocking. But now you're in a place where you're helping women. I mean, you've written books, you do a podcast. What have you found in women that come to you that you've got this incredible voice out there. What are they telling you? What's their stories? What have you found in terms of, you know, what these women are going through?
Well, they're all going through the same things. It's a pattern. I mean, they're waking up. So it's a storyline and they're all following it. They're waking up.
It's a narrative.
Yeah. They're waking up they're realizing, you know what? I can't make this marriage work. I've worked my butt off for years and it doesn't matter what I do or how good I am. I can't make this work. It takes two people to make a marriage work. And they are finally realizing that they're the only one doing anything. So they start reading books. That's usually when they find me.
Happened to you. Yeah.
Yeah,
you start reading, getting some education around it.
Yes. I started a couple of years ago, I started a support group with just a handful of women who were kind of trying to get out and just wanted some camaraderie. They wanted some support. They wanted some education. And I started this group and I wrote courses for them. So I'd write a new course for them each month. And we had a secret Facebook group and I did a Q&A every month and we did a coffee chat where we talked together every month. And it just ended up exploding. They told their friends and people started joining this group. And now it's got over 400 members. And they're all women who are working towards either making it work in their marriage. Some of them believe that they can still make it work. And I don't know if they can or not. That's not my place to tell people what they should do, what they shouldn't do, what's going to happen.
Can't control them.
Exactly. I refuse to do that. But my place is just to support people wherever they're at.
Yeah, hey, whatever that means, whatever it looks like.
Exactly. I'm on your side. I'm in your court. I'll be a listener. I will speak into your life with encouragement. I will help you in whichever direction you believe that it is best for you right now. Because this year, it might be something different than what you feel is best for you next year. But I just believe that God gives... If you're a Christian, you got the Holy Spirit living inside of you. That's all the wisdom you need is just your own. And he gives you common sense. You know what I mean? I mean, he wires us humans with some common sense. We need to start listening to ourselves too. We have an inner mentor inside that we can also be listening to. And the Holy Spirit and that inner mentor, they work together to help guide us in the best course for life. And if we make a mistake, I tell women all the time, making mistakes is human and it's okay to make mistakes. Our child makes a mistake. We don't pick him up and beat him over the head for it and tell him, you know, you better not ever do that again, or I'm going to kick you out of the house. No, we pick them up. We encourage them. We love them. We tell them it's going to be okay. There's, you know, let's try again. And that's what we need to do for ourselves too. And that's what God does for us.
So you're in this support, you've started the support group. I'm interested to find out what you're finding, going back to what you talked about with this narrative of women, because we were talking about before we started recording about the parallels between cults and abusive relationships, this area of mind control and indoctrination and sexual abuse, emotional abuse, and even after you leave, the gaslighting, the controls, even after people leave, the shunning by family members. These are all sort of classic cult markers that you see. People who leave cults, so they get shunned and their family doesn't talk to them anymore. And that must happen in these women that you've talked to.
It does. Oh my gosh. All kinds of, I'm working with a local woman right now and I'm watching it up close and personal from the beginning to, you know, she just filed for divorce and the shit has hit the fan and she has lost her family of origin. She has one brother who is supporting her. Everyone else, she's lost them. She's lost friends. She's lost her church. She's lost everything. And she is she's grieving. She's lonely. She's trying to make ends. She's working two different jobs to make ends meet, to put food on the table for her children because her soon-to-be ex-husband is not providing her with finances anymore. It's absolutely horrible. And you know what? If she was in the secular world, let's just say that she wasn't a church person, okay? If she was in the secular world and she was getting a divorce, would she be losing her family, her friends, her social group? I don't think so. I don't think out in the secular world, I don't think they eat their own when someone gets a divorce. I think they let people, there's more of an acceptance of and respect for the fact that you get to live your life, I get to live my life. Let's be in relationship with each other.
Yeah, sometimes marriages don't work out. I mean, let's just be honest. But yeah, as you say, you strip away that religious ideology and two people, I mean, obviously there are horrible, horrible marriages in the secular world. We all know that there's abusive, terrible relationships that have nothing to do with religion. But yeah, in general, though, I know what you're saying. In general terms, if a marriage just dissolves, in fact, I met a woman the other day. She's going on holiday with her ex-husband for a week or two, and he's since remarried, and so has she. And they have nothing to do with religion. It's just that their marriage wasn't working, and they amicably split up, and they're still friends, you know? Yeah. And so you go, why can't you be friends? You know, I mean, I understand not every marriage ends well, for sure. But yeah, the religious component, I remember when I was in Bible college, we were sitting in a class and we were doing New Testament, and the professor was talking about Jesus's words about, you know, unless you are divorced because of sexual adultery, you mm-hmm. cannot be remarried. And I remember a friend of mine was devastated because he was divorced, but not because of sexual, you know, and he was thought, I'll never be able to get remarried. There's such a stigma when you put the religious piece into it.
Well, and that's not even true. If you read, like David Instone Brewer has a great book out. He's a wonderful Bible scholar, actually over in the UK. And he has a book out called, Divorce and Remarriage in the Church. And he makes an excellent biblical case for the fact that you can get divorced and remarried for more than just adultery, abuse, abandonment. What else? I think those are the three main ones: adultery, abuse, and abandonment. So, and that abandonment can be emotional abandonment.
I was going to say emotional, because one of the things is that the real ugly side to this whole conversation, we haven't touched on it yet, but women specifically in abusive relationships, whether it's physical or emotional abandonment, are being told by their pastors and church leaders, you have to stay in the marriage because unless he's had an affair on you, you have no biblical grounds for divorce. And so they have to stay in these horrible, dysfunctional marriages. That must be what you hear from some of these women. I'm sure of it.
Yes, all the time.
And that is just terrible.
It's not a divorce. The divorce is not what broke up the marriage. That's just the legal signing of the papers. The broken vows are what broke the marriage. And you can have been living in a marriage for 20 years and those vows were broken in the first week. But I mean, we all make mistakes, right? I mean, we all do things that we say things that we regret. But broken vows are when you don't care. You hurt somebody over and over and over and over again, and you don't care and you don't change. That's abusive.
That's abusive. Yeah, you may not lay a hand on the person, but it's just as traumatic. That's the thing, isn't it? The trauma, whether it's physical or emotional abuse, is deeply scarring for people, isn't it? That's one of the things about it. Religious trauma, spiritual trauma, trauma in a marriage that's been long over, as you say. Yep. Because I remember my mom saying that to me when I was a kid, that our marriage is basically a sham. You know, it was never a marriage. She never divorced him. She was with him right up until he passed away about 5-6 years ago. And that's what she said. She was miserable, absolutely miserable. They were going through the motions, but she couldn't divorce him because he never had an affair.
Yep. I know lots of women who believe that.
They just stay. And I have a sister who did the same thing. And her husband passed away from some very serious medical problems. And she was absolutely miserable their entire 30 plus years of. And she said to me, I hate to say this to you, but I'm glad that he's dead, because now I'm released. And she got remarried to a guy who she absolutely loves, and she's finally happy.
Oh, but she's still awesome.
Yeah, that's the good news. The bad news is she's still a total fundamentalist who, you know, is heavily involved in all, but at least she's happy. But it took her husband passing away. And then she felt like then and only then could she say, I fulfilled my vows. I stayed with him until he, till God took him home. And now I'm free to remarry biblically. You know, so even she should have divorced him years ago. She was miserable, but she couldn't in that because of the religious ideology.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Some people believe that, you know, you can get divorced, but you can't get remarried. I mean, the spectrum of ideas a lot on this issue is huge, but
exactly. But nonetheless damaging.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say too, one of the parallels between the cults and fundamentalism and abuse as well is the dehumanization of an individual. So when you're, whether you're in a cult or this fundamentalist group or an abusive marriage, you're dehumanized. You are seen as an extension of the powers that be. And you're as an extension of them, that means that you need to think like them, you need to do like them, dress like them, look like them, be like them. And if you don't, wherever you deviate from that, you are, you know, that's wrong. You can't do that. It's really a violation of God's creating us in his image as individuals, as separate entities. It's a violation of boundaries. It's a relationship killer and it's a person killer. So when you're dehumanized like that, you have been, I believe, it's the same thing as murder. You have been murdered. You, who you are as an individual, has been completely wiped out for the sake of this power that has engulfed you and made you their own.
Absolutely. Well, that's what Robert Lifton calls the dispensing of existence. You as a person don't have the right to exist in the eyes of the cult or in the eyes of an abusive relationship, as you're describing it, because your identity gets subsumed into that of the cult or the, let's say, the controlling partner. And then you don't have that, your identity is gone, as you say. And that's, I was talking to some people just last night for another podcast, and they were saying that religious trauma actually causes neurological damage when you experience trauma, and it stays with you for an incredibly long amount of time. That's what I'm curious to find out too, is the recovery piece, the reconstruction piece. How have you been able to reconstruct? And also, I'm so glad that you're helping so many women. How have you been able to do it?
Well, I'm still working on that. I mean,
it's a work in progress.
Yeah, it really is. I did EMDR therapy a couple years ago. And then I thought, you know, I really felt like I had, I went on medication just to be able to think clearly. And then I thought that I was doing better, but some, you know, things trigger you and then bring up things that you didn't really process before. And that's happened. My dad died last year, and that brought up a whole bunch of stuff for my family of origin. So this last year, it's been kind of a slow spiral back downward a little bit. And that's when I stopped going to church. And now I'm back in therapy and back on medication. And I am not ashamed of that. I just feel like this is such a, when you've been living in this kind of environment, really been living in it your whole life, the recovery process is going to take a few years. And I have made tremendous progress. But all of the women that I work with know, I'm with you. You know, I heard someone else talking about how, and I thought, that's exactly how I feel. In some ways, I'm a little bit ahead of you. In some ways, you're a little bit ahead of me. But in a lot of ways, we're just basically walking side by side. We're in this together.
You're in this thing together.
Figuring it out together.
You're just walking together. And I'm so glad to hear you say that you're not ashamed to admit you're on some medication. I mean, there's, again, going back to church, how many churches and people in churches have we heard that are not getting the medication that could really, really help them because they've been told it's a sin problem or depression isn't a real thing. You just have to pray and God will help you get over it. And meanwhile, they're struggling with some issues that really could be actually fairly simply dealt with from a medical point of view or a psychological point of view, or you got to go see the pastor. He'll give you counseling, but the pastor doesn't know what he's talking about. There's no training. There's no, you know, you need to go see a real therapist. So
exactly.
You may not have any qualifications. They're just going to read you a bunch of Bible verses and you're going to be fine.
Exactly. I talk about that actually in my book about the destructiveness of Bible counselors. and how I had several Bible counselor experiences, all of them absolutely horrifically traumatic. They want, in fact, if you go to the one of their websites, biblicalcounseling.org, they even say, you know, our focus is going to, we're going to be focusing on your sin. What?
Okay. At least they're upfront about it. Yeah, the problem is sin, but it's that worldview. I was talking to another podcast I had recently with Bethany Carter, who became an atheist over this issue of spanking, weirdly enough, because when she started getting triggered over this issue when she had children, how do we discipline our kids? And her husband was pushing for the patriarchal sort of spanking model. She started going to Christian therapy, and the therapist was trying to install that patriarchal narrative from this biblical interpretation. And when she started deconstructing that, that led her down this whole other road, you know. So it all started over spanking, but it was all related to everything that you've just been describing. So I said, that's the clearest example of why you shouldn't go to a Christian, specifically Christian therapist, because they're going to be expressly trying to win you back into the fold. And that's what he was trying to do. You just need to get back into church, Bethany. You've got to get back under your husband's authority, and then everything will be okay. And it was, she just rejected all of it. So that was her journey. Okay, there's probably a lot of women, I think, that would want to make, you know, connections with you. What's your book? What's your podcast? How do people get a hold of you on social media?
Well, my website is flyingfreenow.com. And if you go to the top of it, there's a place where you can sign up to get on my mailing list. And I will, when you do that, I send you the first three chapters of my book for free. And those three chapters go into very great detail about what an emotionally abusive relationship is in the Christian environment. So at the end of those three chapters, after you're done reading them, you'll either be like, oh, this, I cannot relate to this. And you can just throw it in the garbage. Or if you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is exactly my life. Now what? Then you can get my book. It's on Amazon. It's called, Is It Me? Making Sense of Your Confusing Marriage, A Christian Woman's Guide to Hidden Emotional and Spiritual Abuse. And then the other, let's see, the podcast is just called Flying Free. So that's on my website, you know, in the menu bar, there's a podcast link, but you can also find it on whatever, you know, whatever.
Yeah, Podblasters, iTunes and Google Play and all that.
Exactly.
So look for that podcast. And then where are you on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
It is Fly Free Natalie.
Right. So you're on Twitter as well, which is where we connected.
Yes. I'm brand new. I just got on there this month for the first time. I'm like, oh my word, this is like crack for me.
It's opened up a whole new world for you, Natalie.
It really has. I love it.
Next thing you know, we're talking and, you know, having this amazing conversation all because of Twitter. Social media is the way forward. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Twitter's amazing.
Over there, I've just found so many kindred spirits. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's I've found a huge supportive community on Twitter as well. A lot of the people I've connected with via the podcast and a lot of the stuff that I tweet about is it's about cults and things like that. But I kind of want to get people to think. I want to start conversations. So that's kind of my whole angle. So if you follow me, that's kind of what you can expect. That's kind of the teacher in me, though. I love starting discussions. That's how I taught classes is I don't want to stand up there and talk for an hour about a topic. I want to ask questions and get a dialogue going. So that's why I love doing this podcast, because I can meet people like you. So thank you so much for being on this show. I hope people will get a hold of you as a result of this episode, though. I really do. I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this discussion with Natalie Hoffman. It's kind of an eye-opening thing for me to start really putting those pieces together. And I hope for you too, especially if you're a woman trapped in an emotionally abusive relationship like Natalie was and so many other people. And as we've said before, yes, it can happen to men, but predominantly what we find is it's women who are controlled and abused by their partners, their husbands, their boyfriends, or whatever, and it becomes a very dysfunctional thing, and it's, as she says, it's kind of like a murder of your own personality, and this is something again, we see in cults, your authentic, your original identity is replaced by that of the cult identity. You are subsumed into the group. And in this, in the case of these abusive relationships, your own identity is sort of washed away and you become more and more indoctrinated and controlled. And you're taking all the responsibility for the relationship or the marriage, and your partner isn't doing anything. And it's very damaging, very unhealthy. And the best thing you can do, like Natalie, is to get out of that relationship. And of course, in the case of Natalie and so many other women, you got to add that layer of the religious indoctrination, the religious piece. Look at what happened to her. Even though she was separated from her partner, filing for divorce, she had quit the church. She walked away from John Piper's church. She tendered her resignation. I'm no longer a member here. It didn't matter. They tried to control the narrative. They were excommunicating her. They were still holding public meetings to talk about what to do about this sinful, horrible woman who was really trying to assert her own independence, maybe for the first time in her whole life. So I'm proud of Natalie for standing up and not listening to that, because some people would have gone right back into it and just submitted to the patriarchy, to the misogyny, which unfortunately is informed by a lot of biblical passages. So again, well done to Natalie for standing up to the system and getting out and asserting her own voice. And obviously, as she said, she is helping hundreds and hundreds of women who are either trapped in relationships like hers or have gotten out and they're trying to rebuild, trying to reconstruct. So if that describes you, then I would definitely encourage you to get a hold of Natalie. Now, what's coming up in the next couple of weeks here on Mindshift Podcast? Just shifting gears. One of the things that we've got going on is when this episode drops, I'm going to be in the States. I'm doing this episode now while I'm still here in North Wales, but I'm getting ready to jump on a plane. I'm heading out tomorrow, actually. So when this episode drops, it'll be the 12th of July. Make sure to tune in to Neil604's YouTube channel on the 13th of July, because I'm going to be up in BC. My sister Valerie and I are going to be driving up there from Seattle on the 12th, 13th, 14th. We're going to have a get-together. If anyone's up in the BC area, New Westminster, we're going to be having a get-together for lunch at Frankie G's Pub in New Westminster in Vancouver, BC. And then that evening, Neil and I are going to be doing his YouTube channel, which I believe starts at 6 p.m. West Coast time. So look up Neil604 on YouTube. I think I'm going to be co-hosting that with him. Unfortunately, we couldn't get enough room for a live audience, but we're going to be doing that episode together from what I've understood. So check out Neil604's channel on the 13th of July. So I'm really looking forward to that. Also then, coming up in a couple of weeks here on Mindshift Podcast, I've got a discussion with Dr. Daryl Ray. He is a psychiatrist. He is the head of the Recovering from Religion Foundation. We had an absolutely fascinating discussion around this topic of how to recover from religion and what it's all about. We go into a lot of detail, so you're not going to want to miss my discussion with Daryl Ray. Also, queuing up, as we get into August, I've got a discussion with Brielle Decker. She was the 65th wife of Warren Jeffs, the cult leader of the FLDS, the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints cult out of, well, they have compounds in Canada, America, Mexico, mainly in the Utah, Colorado area. They are a polygamist cult, and her story is unbelievable. So stay tuned for that episode with Brielle Decker. Blanchard is actually the name she's going by now. So this is a fascinating, unbelievable story. I've also got Tim Sledge of the book Goodbye Jesus. We had an absolutely unbelievable conversation just the other night as well. So we're going to be talking about a little bit about his story, but also we're going to get into the whole issue of the Trump evangelical vote, what's going on, not just in America, but in the world today. And there's a lot of things that we need to be concerned about. This is something that I talked about with Chris Shelton as well as with Conway and Siegelman in my episode last week. So there's a lot of things that you need to be aware of what's going on in evangelicalism and fundamentalist Christianity today. So I won't talk too much more about it. You need to stay tuned for that episode with Tim Sledge coming up in August. So thanks again for joining myself and Natalie Hoffman. I hope you've gotten a lot out of this. I know I learned a lot from Natalie, and I hope you did as well. So I will see you in a couple of weeks with Daryl Ray from the Recovering from Religion Foundation. Thanks for joining me and Natalie Hoffman right here on Mindshift Podcast.